Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, the Tennessee football season is mercifully over. Tennessee will not have an opportunity to tie its program record for 8 losses in a single season. The Vols are out of the Liberty Bowl after Jeremy Pruitt tested positive for COVID-19. Tennessee football announced that multiple individuals within the program have tested positive, and thus the season is over. So what are your thoughts on this 3-7 campaign for the Vols?
Well, it was historically bad. You have to go back to 19 and 24 to find a 3-win Tennessee team. I covered that team back in 24, and I have to say that this is actually a better team. That team played a really easy schedule.
I'm glad we have your perspective on that 19-24
team. Yeah, it's great to be able to draw on those past seasons. One thing though about this, the way this, you know, this evolved was unusual though. If Tennessee had these positive tests, why did it not know that Sunday?
That's the case. Tennessee gets tested on Sunday every week, Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday in a typical week. And the Sunday tests generally come back on Monday. So when the bowl selections came out on Sunday, as sticking with the usual timeline, they players and staff would have been tested on Sunday, and they find out those results on Monday every week.
Well, my last test, it took 15 minutes to get the results back, just saying.
Well, so the end of the season comes while Tennessee's program is under internal investigation on allegations of recruiting violations, impermissible benefits to athletes. So this investigation is ongoing. It's being conducted by the University of Tennessee. And that's the last thing that Jeremy Pruitt needs right now. You have an embattled coach, 16-19 through 3 seasons, was on the hot seat independent of an internal investigation into allegations of recruiting malfeasance within his program. And now you have this on top of that. How do you see this affecting Pruitt, the investigation on top of a 3-7 season?
I think it'll affect him dramatically. I think it's one thing, again, in recalling my institutional knowledge of Tennessee sports, just when you think things can't get any worse, they do. I mean, a 3-7 season is historically bad, yet now you find out the team's under investigation, that it could have been cheating. I'm not saying it was. In fact, to me, a defense against any NCAA improprieties is the record. A team cheating and 3-7, I'd say, wait a minute, guys. Hey, we'd have won more games if we'd have been cheating. So I just think, though, this certainly affects Jeremy Pruitt. We don't know if Tennessee wants to get rid of him or not. We're kind of in limbo here. Tennessee doesn't say, hey, we're sticking with Jeremy Pruitt in 2021, and it hasn't announced we're making a change. So we're in limbo. But if you do want to make a change, to me, if these charges are true, and you can support them with evidence, then that gives you leverage in negotiating with Jeremy Pruitt. If you want him out of here, now you can say, well, let's settle this thing. I mean, because you have the old, well, firing somebody for cause. This could be cause. Now, it might be hard to prove that might be a prolonged procedure. So you could just say, let's just settle this and we won't pay you $12 million. We'll pay you $5 or $6 million.
Right. That's going to be interesting to follow if this does result in, or not result necessarily, but does end in Pruitt's firing, because his buyout as it stands right now, if he's fired without cause, and just, you know, I think sometimes fans wonder, well, Tennessee went 3-7 this season. Isn't that cause? You know, for folks like you and I, John, that would be cause. If we had a miserable year on the job, that would be cause for for our bosses to come in and say, John, pack your things. You've been fired. You had a terrible year. And don't expect a buyout on the way out the door. But
That's a great point.
In the world of football coaching, going 3-7 is not considered a firing for cause. You can go 0-10, and that's not firing for cause. You're still owed your buyout. So simply going 3-7 is not going to help Tennessee get out of its buyout. He's owed nearly $12.8 million in severance. But in terms of firing for cause, infractions that are deemed a level one or level two violation, if he commits them, if Pruitt commits them, that could be grounds for firing for cause. Or if someone who reports directly to Pruitt commits a level one or level two violation, and it involves neglect or lack of reasonable preventative measures by Pruitt, then that could be a firing for cause. But as you mentioned, John, a lot of times these firing for cause provisions are added to contracts, not to actually fire someone for cause. That's actually, in practice, that's really difficult to do, to just say, we're not giving you any buyout money, goodbye. It can be quite hard to do that. But the real reason provisions like this are in the contract are what you just touched on, to help negotiate down the buyout, to say, hey, you know, we're investigating recruiting malfeasance. This could turn up violations. How about we bring down this buyout a little bit and see if you can get someone to settle in between? So that, I think, is a more, if Tennessee were to fire Pruitt and to try to get down this buyout, I think what you're hitting on there is a possible avenue there of not just walking away empty-handed, but using it as leverage to try to get his buyout down.
Well, kudos to you for your legal expertise. I didn't realize you were so well educated in contractual law, but I think those are really valid points. I also look at it from Pruitt's, from the coach's perspective. I mean, it's better for him. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt was, you know, he was a high school coach in Alabama for a long time. I mean, the idea that he could get $5 or $6 million for doing absolutely nothing, you don't turn your back on that. So, I mean, it's kind of a win-win for everybody if a firing can actually be a win.
You don't think my minor in criminal justice makes me a legal expert, John?
No, I think it probably does. I think if I didn't have a good attorney already, I would consider you for it, at least as a consultant.
Well, I'm not licensed to practice law in Tennessee or any other state. So
who cares about licenses if you want? You want advice?
It's you know, these investigations, they usually don't move quickly, John. And in my experience, and I know you've covered your share of some of this as well. Generally, these things move quite slowly. They typically start internally with an internal investigation. And then, you know, at some point, if there are violations, those get reported to the SEC and the NCAA, and the process goes on and on. And so how quickly could this speed up the decision on Jeremy Pruitt? Because I think, you know, if we're sitting here thinking this investigation is going to conclude by Christmas, I'm not saying that is impossible, but that seems unlikely to me that this investigation could wrap up here in the next few days. These things typically take a while. So how does that affect the timeline, do you think, on the decision for Jeremy Pruitt?
Well, here's the thing. When we think in terms of investigations, we think in terms of the NCAA, which invariably moves at glacier-like speed. An internal investigation, a school has more control over that. And if a school has an agenda, as Tennessee well might, it can push the accelerator on this investigation. I think that's what will happen. If you see this as a way to get rid of Jeremy Pruitt, and you want to do it as quickly as possible. And so it's not as though you're having to have enough evidence to go into court and prove a case, and you want to have every T crossed and every I dotted. If you can present enough evidence to show, here's what we got, this, you know, this is clearly a violation, then things can move much faster. And I think that's what will happen. I mean, I don't think it'll happen before Christmas, but I could see something happening next week. There's no reason, there's no good reason for Tennessee to want to prolong this. If it does, in fact, want to fire Jeremy Pruitt, the sooner the better.
And they could continue investigating even after they make a decision on Pruitt's fate. You know, they could make a decision on that, keep investigating. And if they, it's not like you got to fork, you know, with Pruitt's buyout, it's not as if Tennessee has to fork over $12.8 million on the day it fires him. He would be owed that buyout throughout the next 5 years, through the duration of his contract. So
exactly. You know, and really, Blake, excuse me, but it's as though Tennessee is playing offense and defense. Offense, you're building a case against a coach who is not succeeding spectacularly. Defense, you've got to prepare a case for on down the road when the NCAA can get involved in this. So you want to be able to present, yeah, here's what happened and here's what we did. And again, this plays in Tennessee's favor when you look at its defense, because it's like, hey, we became aware of this and man, we got after it. We wasted no time. I mean, we worked as speedily as we could to resolve this and get to the bottom of it. And this is what we came up with. So this, the NCAA will pat it on its head, UT on its head, and say, nice work, guys. We appreciate your, how conscientious you've been.
Philip Fulmer offered maybe we're reading the tea leaves pretty heavily here to extrapolate something from a news release on Tennessee's acceptance to the Liberty Bowl, which then Tennessee is not actually going to play in. But if we're attempting to extrapolate something from that, Philip Fulmer offered what I thought was his most definitive statement to date that he plans for Pruitt to be back next season. His statement on the Liberty Bowl said something to the effect of it would be a good opportunity, you know, for Pruitt and the team to prepare themselves heading into next spring or heading into spring practice. So that would suggest that if it's up to Philip Fulmer, he intends for Pruitt to be back next season. The quote is, quote, it's a tremendous development opportunity for our team and should serve as a primer to spring practice for Coach Pruitt and our returners. So that would suggest that Fulmer is in the camp of expecting Pruitt to be back next season. How much, though, does that matter, do you think, in the fate of Jeremy Pruitt, what Philip Fulmer plans to have happen?
Absolutely none at all. I mean, Philip Fulmer needs to be worried about his own job. I mean, his job was to fix according to him, is to fix a football program. Well, you see how he's fixed it. So, no, he needs to be worried about his own job. And his opinion on Jeremy Pruitt getting ready for spring practice will have no bearing on this whatsoever. And actually, if Tennessee had gone through this bowl game, it would have just been another bad game, because West Virginia has a pretty good defense. When you hold teams under 300 yards a game and you're playing in the Big 12, that tells me Tennessee couldn't have dented that defense at all. And they also throw the ball pretty well, so we know how that would have gone. I think it's interesting, though, that Philip Fulmer would even say that.
In a statement, John, now he appeared in the Liberty Bowl news conference later that night and was in and out in about 90 seconds. Philip Fulmer made a few brief remarks, and then he was out the door pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, I mean, as Philip Fulmer press conferences go, the bottom line is the quicker the better. He's not going to help himself or the program by talking more, I don't think. You may start talking about Jeremy Pruitt's spring practice, as he did in the statement. I don't think Philip Fulmer would be involved in this, and I think if they do decide to make a coaching change, they don't want Philip Fulmer involved in the coaching search. You know, he had his shot, and this is what you have, a 3-7 team under investigation.
We'll be right back.
Wow, what a week of college football. Some of those games were thrillers. I hope you had some time to relax and crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light. Hey, it's Adam for Coors Light. It's the one beer that's literally made to chill. The mountains on Coors Light cold-activated bottles and cans turn blue when chilled to perfection. So now we know who the four teams are for the college football playoffs. Should be a couple of great games on New Year's Day. Now make sure your refrigerator is stocked up with plenty of Coors Light. Coors Light is brewed with a three-step cold process. It's cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's literally made to chill. When you need a moment to chill, choose Coors Light. You can even have Coors Light delivered to your door. Go to get.coorslight.com and find your local delivery options. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
John, some of the hand-wringing over Tennessee dropping out of the Liberty Bowl is that Tennessee's going to miss out on those extra bowl practices. Oh, yeah. Always a top storyline this time of year is the value of those bowl practices. Yeah, you know, in a normal year, Tennessee might get about, if you make a bowl game, you might get 3 or 4 weeks of extra practice. Now, keep in mind, Tennessee did have that extra practice last year heading into the Gator Bowl.
Yeah.
And a lot of good that did for the 2020 season. This year, Tennessee probably would have had maybe 5 or 6 extra practices heading into that Liberty Bowl. Probably would have taken a couple days around Christmas off anyway, but would have had a chance to get after it on the practice field another 5 or 6 times here in 2020. How will Tennessee carry on without those extra bowl practices?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I assume Tennessee has been practicing all along, but it practice for Texas A&M and practice for Florida and practice for Alabama, and you see where that got Tennessee. No, I think this is a welcome relief for the team, for the players. This has been a difficult year for the players to go through all this COVID stuff and the uncertainty of it. And do you think any of these guys really wanted to practice and play West Virginia in a bowl game where they're going to lose by a couple of touchdowns? I don't think so. I mean, there are a couple of players that Trey Smith, certainly, that need to start thinking about their NFL career. And the other guys probably would just like to go home for the holidays.
I would think so. I mean, normally there's some excitement that comes with a bowl bid, but normally you're not 3-7 when you're accepting a bowl bid. And there's a little bit of festivities that come along with the bowl game as well. And when the bowl is being played in the midst of a pandemic, those festivities kind of go by the wayside. But it actually worked out well for Army. They were going to be left out of a bowl, and now they have taken Tennessee's spot in the Liberty Bowl against West Virginia, which might actually be a bad thing for West Virginia. Their opponent in this game suddenly just got a lot tougher.
Yeah, that was bad news for West Virginia. Army's a difficult team to play. Tennessee surely wouldn't have wanted to play it. Blake, but I got several emails from fans, Tennessee fans, upon hearing that Tennessee was getting ready to extend this glorious season in the Liberty Bowl, and they were irate. They said Tennessee doesn't belong in a bowl game. Army belongs in a bowl game, and Tennessee has no control over that. We've that as well as anyone because of your expertise in contractual law. You know that Tennessee and all SEC schools have these contracts. They're tied into bowl games. You don't want to set the precedent of saying, well, we got a couple of 3-7 teams here. We'll just back out of the bowl because 3 years down the road, the bowl may say, well, you know, your 6-6 team isn't nearly as good as this 10-1 Army team we got. So you can just sit this bowl game out. So that wasn't Tennessee's fault for getting in there and fighting for a bowl.
Question I hear on phone conversations, text messages every day, John, and I try to, my answer fluctuates by the day, is what percentage chance do you think Jeremy Pruitt is back in 2021? And like I said, my answer changes by the day. So I might say 60% chance he's back one day, 40% chance the next, but I will say the percentages as a whole, they've sure dropped a lot since, let's say, mid-November. They keep going down. You know, I would have said even after the loss to Arkansas in early November. I think at about 85-90%, Jeremy Pruitt is going to be back. And since in the weeks that have followed, that percentage just comes down, still fluctuates, but overall it's trending down. Where do you stand on that right now? Percentage chance Pruitt is coaching the Vols when Tennessee opens its 2021 season?
Well, if it were my call, it'd be no chance he's coaching the Vols in 21. And I think a lot of fans feel that way. But with the UT administration, I don't know. But I think the internal investigation, to me, that's a game changer. Because if this is all I don't think anybody in UT administration, other than maybe Philip Fulmer, who's excited about the potential for bowl practices, I don't think anybody else in administration is thinking, boy, this program could really, really climb the ladder next year. Big things are coming, and can't wait to get Jeremy Pruitt back for a fourth season. The only reason it thinks it wants him back is because it doesn't want to pay him $12 million. And so, yeah, I just think the investigation, that gives UT leverage, and I think because of that, I think it's about 80-20 that Pruitt won't be back.
Do you think if I ask you tomorrow, Pruitt's percentages would improve, or are they going to keep going down in your mind? I guess no one knows what tomorrow will bring, but what would you expect there, John? I know you don't mind gazing into the crystal ball.
No, I don't, Blake. And I think it'll probably be about 85-15 against him coming back percentage-wise next year. Tomorrow, that's my prediction for tomorrow, because I just figured, like, I don't think the investigation is suddenly going to turn up something more favorable. It would tend to be more unfavorable. So that would be my prognostication.
The best thing it could turn up is that Tennessee was not, in fact, cheating and went 3-7 this year regardless, which, as we discussed earlier in this podcast, that's not great. I mean, either you are cheating and you went 3-7, or you're not cheating, but you still went 3-7.
Yeah, I do want to clarify something. I mentioned that I thought that Tennessee's 19-24 team was worse than this one because it played an easier schedule and only won three games. However, in fairness, I should point out that team only lost five games. So for the benefit of those players that might have heard our podcast, I just want to clear that up.
And cheating is a strong word. I should say alleged violation of rules, John. Far be it from I to say the word cheating.
Spoken like a lawyer.
John, this would not, if Tennessee decides to make a move, this would not be the first time in this millennium that Tennessee has made a move on a coach after three seasons. Derek Dooley did not even make it to the end of his third season. Comparing coaching tenures in the moment, I realize, can be a difficult thing to do, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. Jeremy Pruitt's tenure versus Derek Dooley's tenure through 3 years, how does Pruitt stack up in comparison?
I think if we're doing this by a one-loss record, you would say that Pruitt was better. I think Derek Dooley was like maybe 15 or 16 and 21 or something like that. We don't have time for me to look that up. So Pruitt was somewhat better. However, Derek Dooley did not – his program was not under an internal investigation with possible alleged violations. Also, I thought Dooley was more competitive. He got some horrible breaks. That LSU game they lost, Tennessee lost in Baton Rouge. I mean, I'm sorry, but that Tennessee should have won that game. I mean, the way that was handled, that should have been a Tennessee win, and it was a two-point game as it was. Then the North Carolina game in the Music City Bowl, Tennessee really almost won that, and Tennessee played Georgia, a seven-point team. I guess you go with the record, but to me it's pretty much even as far as Pruitt and Derek Dooley go. Butch Jones is better. I never thought I would say that. Gosh. I never thought I would say that somebody, a Tennessee coach, was worse than Butch Jones, but it's true. Really, as it turns out, Butch might be the best of the last four hires because Lane Kiffin left after 1 year. But, yeah, I think not only is this – when you look at the more elite programs in the SEC, I use that term loosely, but I think his tenure is one of the worst in SEC history. If you end up, you know, if you're at Auburn, I'm talking about Auburn, Alabama, LSU, Florida, and Georgia, the top six. A&M hadn't been in the league long enough, but when you look at it from a conference perspective, you know, your best year was you still lost five games. Gosh, I think some of the worst coaches in this league, Jerry Stovall at LSU comes quickly to mind. He went 8-3 one year. It's not just really bad by UT standards. It's bad by SEC standards.
You mentioned bad breaks, John, for that Derek Dooley encountered. I don't think you're taking into account the bad break Tennessee had in losing to BYU last year, breakdown in coverage at the end of that game. The bad break Jeremy Pruitt got in having to play Georgia State in the season opener, fairly plucky team. And, you know, I mean, he could have got Chattanooga in the season opener last season. Instead, he got a Georgia State team, albeit coming off of a 2-10 season in 2018. But still, that was not an FCS cupcake coming out of the gates there. He had to play an FBS team in the opener.
That's a great point. Again, spoken like a true lawyer arguing your case. Georgia State, I think it really was, in a way, an unfair matchup. That team was ranked either in most preseason polls and preseason publications, that Georgia State team was ranked either last or second to last in the Sun Belt Conference. And it was clearly better than that. So Tennessee went into that game really not knowing what it was getting into, and that was kind of unfair. I think it thought it would just waltz through that game, and it turned out playing a decent team and was beaten, even worse than the score indicated. So, yeah, that's a good point. That was a bad break. And BYU, Tennessee really outplayed BYU for most of that game. I thought it was a better team, and then just kind of just checked out a little too early back there in the secondary. They were just kind of running around wild and loose. And so that cost Tennessee a game. Other bad breaks. And of course this affected Dooley too, but you know, just having to play Alabama every year, that's really not fair.
No.
Yeah.
And Pruitt does not, you know, the schedule he's playing this year, it was decided by the conference, a 10 game conference only schedule. Last year, it's not like Pruitt was the coach when they scheduled Georgia State. You know, that was scheduled years in advance. Had he been the coach, he might have said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like,
yeah.
He's had a really hard time beating FBS teams during his time. He might have suggested, hey, let's start off here with an FCS opponent. Had he been.
Yeah, not just any FCS opponent, preferably a really bad one. And I thought another thing, too, the Arkansas game. That was clearly unfair because you go back to expectations. That was an awful team. It's been awful for 3 years, the three previous seasons. And that's what Tennessee thought it was getting. And it turns out Arkansas was a fairly competitive team. And I just thought that was a bad break for Tennessee that Arkansas was markedly better. So, yeah, you're right. Pruitt, in his tenure here, there's been some really bad breaks over which he really had no control. No, I'm not laughing.
I don't hear any laughter.
You brought this up. Yeah, it's valid. It was, you know, Kentucky. A 27-point loss to Kentucky. That easily, you take out those 18 interceptions, that game easily could have gone the other way. So there you go.
It's a good point. John, you looking forward to spring practice?
I never look forward to spring practice, but maybe I will this time. I'll just be curious to see who's out there, if Jeremy Pruitt's still out there running around with the guys, if Philip Fulmer's still working with the offensive line, and he and Will Friend bringing that unit around, and maybe look forward to seeing that secondary showing some improvement in the spring.
We shall see. Will be interesting to follow. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State Podcast.